Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the VGI Partners Limited FY19 results briefing. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. If you wish to ask a question via the webcast, please click on the Ask a Question tab on the top right corner of your screen anytime during the conference. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Robert Luciano, Executive Chairman and Portfolio Manager. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and welcome to the inaugural full-year results conference call and webcast for VGI Partners Limited. We appreciate the support of all our shareholders, and I'd particularly thank all of you who have taken the time to join the call today. With me in the room is Douglas Tynan, an Executive Director of VGI Partners with responsibility for leading our research activity, Ian Cameron, our Chief Financial Officer, and Ingrid Groer, our Investor Relations Manager. The purpose of today is to take your questions on the full-year result that was lodged with the ASX this morning. But before we open the lines for questions, I would like to highlight some key points from the slide presentation that we have prepared for you. Now, turning to page two, the first half of the calendar year was a significant period for the company, with the VGI Partners IPO completed in June 2019. This was conducted using a unique structure that was linked to a 300 million dollar raising in our listed investment company, VGI Partners Global Investments Limited, which trades on the Australian Stock Exchange under the ticker VG1. Now, the VGI Partners Limited IPO created a strong balance sheet, and it was very purposeful in that the IPO was structured so as to increase alignment between our company and our existing investors in our funds. Now, it's important to remember, however, that key members of management still own more than 77% of VGI Partners, and we are committed for the very long term. In fact, the founders did not sell a single share into the IPO, and the majority of our shares are voluntarily escrowed for 5 years. The second half of the year was equally eventful, with the listing of VGI Partners Asian Investments Limited, and this trades on the Australian Stock Exchange under the ticker VG8. VG8 represents only the second investment strategy that VGI Partners has launched since the firm was established in 2008. Free VGI Partners shares were granted to VG8 IPO investors in proportion to their investment. Now, turning to key financial metrics, we finished the year with funds under management of 3.1 billion dollars, including the 300 million dollars raised via the VG1 offer and a little over 550 million raised via VG8. Total operating revenue for the year was 69 million dollars. Normalized costs, excluding depreciation and amortization, were 21 million dollars. As a result, normalized EBIT was 47.3 million, and normalized NPAT was 33 million. Funds under management has since grown to 3.3 billion at the end of January, and as I will discuss later, this implies run rate annualized net management fees of approximately 47 million dollars. Now, the board has declared a final dividend of 0.093 per share, fully franked to 27.5%. If you combine this with our 0.256 interim dividend, total dividends for the year were 0.349, with an initial IPO price of 5.50 dollars. Now, moving to the next section, we have provided a couple of slides that describe our business and our strong focus on alignment of interests, which we hope all of you will find useful. In particular, as we note on page five, our staff and their families have well over $100 million invested in our funds, and in addition, own over 77% of VGI Partners itself. We believe this demonstrates our team's commitment to our firm and is a very strong incentive for us to achieve the best results that we can for our fund investors and our shareholders. Now turning to page 6. This chart provides a snapshot of how we are doing at meeting our core objectives of delivering long-term risk-adjusted returns for our investors. The VGI Partners Master Fund is our largest and longest established core fund and has delivered compound annual returns of 14.8% net of fees since it was established in January 2009. This performance is near the top end of our target range of 10 to 15% per annum over the long term and through the investment cycle. Moving on to page 7. Our compound returns of 14.8% per annum net in the Master Fund have exceeded those of the MSCI World Total Return Australian Dollar Index, which have been 12% per annum over the same period. It is important to note that we've achieved this with an average net exposure of 70%, meaning that we've delivered returns that are superior than the market while holding a very substantial cash buffer. I would also like to highlight that since inception, the Master Fund portfolio has tended to outperform in periods of market weakness and in down market months, when the market fell 2.2% on average, the decline for the Master Fund was only 0.8%. Now turning to the normalised financials on page 9. For the purpose of calculating normalised net profit after tax, EBIT and earnings per share, we have added back the one-off transaction costs with our IPO and the costs of the concurrent VG1 raising. These are all genuine one-offs and therefore do not reflect the ongoing operations of VGI Partners. The costs of these transactions were expensed through the income statement and amounted to $5.8 million before tax. We've also added back unrealised fair value losses of $1.5 million pre-tax to the other income line. These relate to the mark-to-market of our investments in both VG1 and VG8. Now, by the same token, if we achieve unrealised gains on these holdings in the future, we will subtract the gains to calculate normalised NPAT. All normalisation adjustments were tax affected at 30%. Now I should also mention that $1.5 million of operating costs, which we were required to net from management fees in our 2019 statutory accounts, have been reclassified as costs in our slides. Slide 20 provides a full reconciliation of these adjustments and the calculation of EPS. So turning to page 10, this slide shows our funds under management at the end of 2019. This is all self-explanatory, and I'll now move to page 11. Now the chart on the right-hand side of the page sets out growth in funds under management since we established VGI Partners. For 2019, funds under management grew 48% to $3.1 billion. Now, as mentioned earlier, $300 million of this growth was from the VG1 raising, and approximately $550 million was due to the VG8 IPO, and performance contributed over $100 million to the growth. If we use VGI's funds under management of $3.3 billion at the end of January this year, we estimate that the go-forward annualised net management fees are now around $47 million for the entire VGI Partners group. In addition to management fees, we also earn performance fees of approximately 15% across all of our funds, subject to a high watermark. Today, all of our funds are at or around their high water marks. I'll now turn to a couple of charts that illustrate our fee revenues in a bit more detail. So turning to page 12, the first bar shows our management fees for 2019 of $32.4 million. The rest of the chart is the bridge to the go-forward annualised management fees of $47 million that I just mentioned. Well, if we now turn to page 13, this slide shows our historical management and performance fees on the left. On the right-hand side, we've provided an illustration of fees that could be generated under various performance scenarios. For example, if our net fund performance during 2020 is plus 10%, then VGI Partners could generate approximately $56 million of performance fees. This is clearly a high-level illustration of a number of scenarios and is not intended whatsoever to be a forecast or any form of guidance. Please read the notes on this page for more information. Now I'll pass on to Douglas Tynan to talk through slides 14 and 15. Doug.
Thank you, Rob. On page 14, we have set out more detail of the expenses side of the profit and loss. If we focus firstly on our normalised operating costs, total costs, excluding depreciation and amortisation, were $21 million. The increase on 2018 reflects the growth of our business, but it is worth noting that the full year in 2019 was roughly double the first half of 2019. So costs were steady during the year. Breaking this down further, the biggest cost in our business is personnel. During the year, we built out our team in Tokyo and added to our Sydney and New York investment teams. This figure includes staff bonuses, which are entirely discretionary and are not tied to performance fees. Note also that Robert Luciano, Robert Poyner and I do not participate in the bonus pool. I should also highlight that to date, all staff bonuses have been paid in cash. However, this may change in the future. Alongside the grant of employee options that took place prior to the IPO, we have also established a staff equity scheme, so we have the flexibility to introduce an equity component to future incentives. Regarding the other costs on this page, I'm pleased to highlight that VGI Partners made around $600,000 of donations during 2019. Rob will have more to say about this later in the presentation. I would also like to briefly touch on our capital raising costs during the year, which we have treated as non-recurring. As I described earlier, at VGI Partners we strongly believe in being aligned with the investors in our funds. For this reason, VGI Partners has paid for all of the IPO costs for VG1 as well as for VG8, as well as the costs of VG1's secondary equity raising in 2019. As a result of our own IPO and the recent VG1 raising, VGI Partners expensed $5.8 million pre-tax of one-off costs in 2019. The last point I'd like to make on this slide is that VGI Partners pays for the operating costs of its funds to the maximum extent permitted. This cost was $1.5 million in 2019. Due to recent changes to accounting standards for revenues, we were required to deduct these costs from our management fees in our statutory accounts. In our normalised financials, we've added this amount back to revenues and included them within our total costs. Now turning to page 15 for the balance sheet. We finished the year with $29 million in cash and no debt. Our cash balance rose during 2019 due to our IPO capital raising in June and positive operating cash flow. This was partly offset by dividend payments, our $20 million investment in the VG8 IPO, and the purchase of both VG1 and VG8 shares on market. Our investments in VG1 and VG8 now sit within other assets on the balance sheet, and were a major driver of the increase in this asset category. The increase in equity reflects equity issuance related to the VGI Partners IPO in June, as well as the alignment shares that were issued as part of the VGA offer in November. Our balance sheet strength continues to give us considerable flexibility. In terms of the dividend, as Rob mentioned earlier, we have declared a 9.3 cent final dividend. This is fully franked and will be paid to all shareholders who are on the register at the record date of the 6th of March 2020. The payment date is the 18th of March. The dividend represents roughly a 74% payout for the half and is at the upper end of our payout policy of 50 to 75% of normalised net profit after tax. I will now pass you back to Robert Luciano to discuss page 16.
Thanks, Doug. I'm very pleased to say that VGI Partners supports a number of charities, and our total donation since VGI's formation in 2008 is approximately $5.8 million. These fall into three main categories. Firstly, VGI Partners has made $1.3 million of cash donations since its inception, with annual donations increasing as the business grew. Secondly, in the last few years, VGI has been managing funds for select foundations and charities on a pro bono basis. These funds are shown in the box on the bottom right. Fee rebates for these funds have totaled $3.9 million. And thirdly, we formed the VGI Partners Foundation in late 2018 and established a new charitable foundation class in our VGI Partners Master Fund. Now, 100% of all management and performance fees earned by VGI on the foundation class is donated to the VGI Partners Foundation. This has resulted in a short period of time of over $600,000 in donations so far. More importantly, the foundation class has approximately $28 million of funds under management at the end of December 19, which now equates to over $400,000 of fee donations per annum, purely from management fees. If we were to deliver on our objective of 10 to 15% annual returns, the total donation, including performance fees, would be roughly $800,000 to $1 million each year. If you would like to read more about our VGI Partners Foundation, you'll find details on our website. And if you'd like to invest in the VGI Partners Foundation class, please contact Ingrid Grower or our Chief Operating Officer, Adam Philippe. Now turning to page 17. On this slide, we've summarised our shareholder engagement program. As you can see, there are a number of events happening during the year. In particular, our inaugural AGM as a listed company will take place on the 21st of April in Sydney. I'd like to invite all of you to attend or dial into this annual meeting. If you're a new shareholder, please also consider signing up for email communications and registering for the electronic payment of dividends rather than cheque. These can both be done at the InvestorServe website or simply by completing a form. And finally, I would encourage you to visit our new website. Here you can find our investor letters, briefings and other materials. You can also subscribe for email communications on the Contact Us page if you're not currently on our distribution list. So if you have any questions about your holding or VGI Partners Limited, please feel free to contact Ingrid in our Investor Relations team. Right, so that brings me to the end of the presentation and we'll now move to questions. Operator, could we please have the first question? Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. If you wish to ask a question via the webcast, please click on the Ask a Question tab on the top right corner of your screen anytime during the conference. We do ask that if you are asking a question via the phone lines, please mute yourself once you have finished. We'll now pause momentarily to allow people to enter their questions.
All right. We'll thank you, operator. We can see some questions coming up online now, so we'll start with the first one. First question is, there has been some press speculation around listed investment company and listed investment trust consolidation in the local market. Is there any truth to this speculation? If so, what strategies are of interest to you? And would leveraging the existing team be a focus? Or would you be happy to acquire people infrastructure?
Okay. All right. So in terms of press speculation, we don't. We have a policy of not commenting on press speculation. But what I can say is the following. Before the end of last year, we were doing various roadshows. In our prospectus, we did mention that we were raising surplus cash. In fact, we raised $75 million in cash for VGI Partners Limited as a consequence of the IPO, and that cash would be used to help expand the business and strategic purposes. And people ask, well, what are strategic purposes? And we highlighted that we thought that over time the Australian listed investment company space was ripe for consolidation. So perhaps that is that comment resurfacing in form of speculation. Is that something that is imminent for us? The only thing that we are completely and utterly focused on at the moment is A, generating returns for our funds, and B, narrowing the gap between the current share price and NTA for both VG1 and VGA. So that is our complete focus at the moment. If I was to cast our minds forward and say, well, if we are in a situation over the months ahead or over the course of this year where the discount for VG1 and for VGA narrows and is eliminated, would we consider using either VG1 or VGA to consolidate underperforming listed investment companies in their respective contiguous spaces for VG1, so global equities for VG1 and or Asian for VGA? The answer would be yes. We are constantly approached by disappointed and substantially dissatisfied shareholders of other listed investment companies who are not happy with how those listed investment companies have been managed and performing. You know, we've heard them out. It's a growing chorus of dissatisfaction, and we think that there will be a time and a place for us to perhaps participate in consolidation in the sector, but like I said, not until we eliminate the discount for VG1 and for VGA. So I hope that answers that question. Operator, is there any questions on the line?
There are currently no questions via the phone lines, but I will re-prompt again. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone and then wait for your name to be announced.
Okay. And there's another question that's popped up online. Doug, do you mind reading that out, please?
Yes. So the question is, personnel expenses are up to $11.8 million and now 36% of annual management fee or 25% on a go-forward basis of the management fee. This is down from circa 40%, staff costs being roughly 40% of management fee in FY18. The question is, so can we see the operating leverage coming through? Can you comment on how you think about this cost base, your cost base, and what might be a reasonable headcount cost as a percentage of going forward management fee? Can we expect to see a script-based bonus compensation element to commence in FY20?
Okay. Alright, well there's a lot there. So personnel expenses for FY19 went up. The reason why they went up was we brought on new headcount in Tokyo, New York and Sydney. We now have got to a point where we have a relatively stable headcount number. Having said that, we've made a number of recent hires, particularly in the investor relations area, where we've brought on one new hire here in Sydney, excellent new hire who's helping Ingrid with our investor relations function for our three listed companies, particularly focusing on VG1 and VG8 investor relations. And we're also taking on a new hire of an additional investor relations person who will be based in Brisbane and will be opening a small Brisbane office over the course of the next couple of months, which we're very much looking forward to. And Doug particularly is very much looking forward to having a Brisbane office so he can get back and see his family and friends more often. So, you know, that's I guess that's one aspect there, that we are selectively adding to headcount on a very strategic basis. The research team is at an adequate level in our view. There's constantly some type of refinement in our investment team, and we always will have that. The area that I think we may look to add on the investment team is on the artificial intelligence side or data analytics side, and we currently have one key person who operates from our New York office, who's our data scientist. That is going very well for us. We're very happy with how that's contributing to our research process, and that is an area where we could see some headcount increase in due course. In terms of getting to the point of the question, you know, in terms of headcount as a proportion of management fee, look, that's not something we ever really looked at. We always used to run on a basis where profitability was purely sourced from performance fees. Now the nature of the operation has changed. Yes, there will be substantial operating leverage if you look at it on that basis, because management fees have the capacity to continue to grow without any meaningful increase in compensation expense. Base salaries are kept at a competitive but prudent level. Bonuses are cash and not linked whatsoever to performance fees. So in a year of high performance fees, you won't see this substantial increase in bonuses. That's just not how we operate. We've got no plans if we had to look, you know, in terms of the previous question, if we saw an opportunity for VG1 or VG8 to do a highly value accretive transaction, we do not need to bring on any new personnel. There's no requirement whatsoever. We have ample capacity in our team in Sydney, New York and Tokyo to manage our funds under management. And in fact, there are groups out there who manage 10 times as much money as us, if not 20 times or greater, with smaller teams and with less geographical spread. So I would say, you know, the answer to that, as far as I'm concerned, is we have substantial operating leverage within the business. But I will not rule out the opportunity to bring on extremely capable, high quality people in our investment team, in our operations team, in data analytics or investor relations, if we see extremely high quality people come on board. Which then leads on to that, I guess, that final point on bonus compensation in terms of script. You know, that is purely up to the management team to decide. We operate on a basis where We compensate key personnel based on their contribution to the business and the value they deliver to shareholders. Extremely high quality people who may join in the future could be on existing programs, whether they be at competing organisations, domestically or internationally, and we certainly have the capability and have consistently compensated the best people in this organisation accordingly. And if that includes a script-based program, then obviously we now have that capability and we will pursue that. But I would highlight the current team and the key personnel in the current team have under option roughly just under 7% of the company at the slight premium to the issue price, circa $6. So that's substantially in the money at the moment. That program vests over the next 5 years, I believe. And that's a very substantial equity incentive for our key team. And the vast majority of that equity incentive is skewed towards the key executives in both the operations and investment team based not just in Sydney, but Tokyo and also New York. So I hope that helps answer that question.
Perfect.
Operator, are there any questions on the line?
There are still no questions on the phone.
Okay, because there are more online. So there's another one here.
So the next question online is the amount of cash donation, $1.3 million, amounts to around 5% of statutory profit, which seems very high. Is this a one-off cash amount, or is it expected to be recurring?
Okay. Look, that's a good question. It wasn't $1.3 million for the year. It's $1.3 million in cash over since inception. We started in 2008. We were loss-making in 2008, so we actually made donations in 2008, but they were rather small given we were loss-making. The vast majority of those cash donations have really picked up over the last few years, primarily when we were a private company. So current shareholders haven't paid for that. It was previous shareholders, so myself, Doug Tyne and Rob Poyner. It's always been part of our culture to make contributions, not only through paying a full rate of tax, which we're very proud in saying. We pay full 30% statutory rate. We don't shirk from our responsibility as an Australian corporation. So not only do we pay our full rate of tax, we have always made an effort to donate to worthy causes. And what I would say is the amount that was contributed in cash, we have a foundation that we have set up, and to the foundation donations are made via the foundation class, which we have, which we mentioned. $28 million is in that and growing. All management fees are donated from that foundation. And then all performance fees. So depending on the year and depending on the performance, that amount can be quite substantial. And that amount will go through the accounts, I believe. And the amount that was in the full year 19 P&L was $400,000 amount. Doug, do you want to comment on it?
The way it works is, as Rob mentioned, we've got a charitable foundation class in our fund, within the VGI Partners Fund, and that amount is capped. At the moment, there's $28 million invested in that foundation class. So the way the donations work going forward is that any management fee or performance fee generated from that $28 million class will be gifted to the VGI Partners Foundation, which then makes charitable donations to a range of worthy causes, which we've detailed in the annual report.
So in the annual report, in the P&L line, you'll see the amount, so $640,000 or whatever that is the amount that we've donated through the P&L. That is a combination of cash. That is a combination of cash and foundation contributions. So the P&L line is it's not reflective of an all-cash amount, I guess. And as the foundation grows, the P&L line will be more reflective of a non-cash amount because it is showing the management fees that have been donated, and those management fees will run through our P&L, and we do that on the basis of full transparency. It's not costing shareholders anything because what we're doing is managing a component of money where our management fees are fully rebated, but that is the nature of how that fund was set up. It is set up as a foundation class, and people are participating in that foundation class with VGI Partners, knowing full well that 100% of their fees are being donated to the VGI Partners Foundation. So I hope that answers the question, and I can see how it's a bit confusing. It's 1.3 million cash, but that's really been over the last, I'm going to say really the last 5 to 6 years as VGI Partners profitability has accelerated. So I hope that answers the question.
We have another question on the website. Could you please provide your thoughts on capital allocation in the Asian fund, VG8, particularly being underinvested at a time of market dislocation? Are there any considerations for global portfolio holdings if there is prolonged disruption to supply chains from coronavirus? How can you position to mitigate this?
Yeah, right. Well, I could spend the whole day answering that question. And, you know, this is a call for VGI Partners Limited. And that is a question in relation to our funds. So I will answer it because it's integral to obviously how the management fees and performance fees are generated in this business, but I'm not going to spend too much time on it because I feel that that's really a comment specific to VG1 and VGA. So in terms of the Asian fund, VG8 is the ticker. We've been very slow and steady in investing that cash. The reason for that was, first of all, we had a trade war that has come to a brief pause, and we expect will continue post the US election. And so we are quite cautious about the longer term effects of an ongoing meaningful confrontation between the United States and China. And the United States and its allies in China, and what that means ultimately for trade and capital flows, and what that means obviously for businesses in the region. There will be winners and there will be substantial losers. So we've been slow and steady. Coronavirus started to pick up in January. We have been taking advantage of some volatility. And what we've been doing really over the last week is we've accelerated a number of investment positions across the region. We still have a very high cash weight. The cash weight at the moment is roughly in the 70% vicinity. And we are continuing to add to our positions. The key point is that the cash weight is in US dollars. And that is something that we did once we took over management of the company, and we sold $550 million US dollars at the prevailing rate, which was in the low 70s, and we now have a currency, Australian dollar currency unit, that's 65.5, and looks like it's still trending to the downside, and that's been part of our long-held view. We also have all the cash in VG1 held in US dollars, and our US dollar positions are unhedged to the Aussie dollar. So we're long US in both portfolios. In terms of global portfolio holdings and our holdings in general, we're starting to see some downgrades come out from the best practice corporations who have a clear line of sight into their business units in very short periods of time. This is a good example of who knows the data of their company and who doesn't. MasterCard were very quick to come out. MasterCard have real-time insight into their global business operations and have provided a downgrade. Diageo, another holding of ours, provided a downgrade last night. Unilever, which is not a holding of ours, downgraded. So we're starting to see the world's best practice corporations with substantial IT infrastructure and therefore substantial accounting and management reporting infrastructure coming out with their downgrades pretty rapidly. The companies that start to come out more slowly will be those who obviously have lower quality infrastructure and or are trying to bide their time. What do we think? Well, we think that there's obviously going to be a very substantial hit to earnings this year. The question is how long does this play out? Does it spread to the United States? Does it spread to key population centres where there's minimal health care, like India and or Indonesia? If you see these high population, high density countries which have unfortunately poor healthcare resources, if you see an outbreak in those regions, then that obviously can change a lot. There's minimal outbreak in the United States. We will see what happens. And it's a combination of trying to deal with the facts and the data versus the media. Not only last week, no one was worried. Now this week, everyone is worried. The facts have changed to a certain extent, but not so much. And so it's a combination of trying to understand what the longer term effects of this will be. And the longer term effects at this stage don't appear to be too substantial. But will it have a short term impact? Well, of course it will. And corporations are already coming out and saying it will have a low to mid single digit impact on profitability for the year. And that's based on the information that they have at the moment. But for other certain companies, in the tourism sector or airlines or specific sectors, it could obviously be substantially worse, especially if they're in the midst of having to roll debt or do something else. There could be some real losers. Having said that, our biggest holding for our global portfolios is the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. That stock was up more than 6% last night. It is one of the reasons why we have it in the portfolio is that it's a beneficiary of volatility, and even when there's no volatility, it still seems to do extremely well and pay us a very attractive dividend. And when there's volatility, like we've just experienced, its business does extraordinarily well. It's the central place in the planet where people go to offset risk and manage risk. So I hope that answers the question. I could go into more detail, but I'll leave that for another time. But the person who asked that question, if you'd like to give us a ring, and give Ingrid a ring, I'm sure she'll be happy to provide you with more detail. Any more questions? Anything on the line?
No. There are currently no questions on the phone.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we'll call it a day there. Thank you very much to everyone for joining us, and thank you for your ongoing support of VGI Partners.